Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Midsters Podcast, your podcast for inspiration on being bold and saying yes to making the most of your midlife. So, dear listeners, I want to start this episode with a story, and it relates to going to France with my husband in 2018, and we went specifically because he was involved in a bike event there, and after the bike event, we went to Paris for a few days, and we were outside Notre Dame, right, like a church, and there was a gentleman there who was begging, panhandling, and he had his dog, and the dog was so cute, and the dog looked so sad. And of course, I'm a sucker for a dog. So I opened up my wallet. I took out a euro and I just put it in the guy's bucket. A block later, we stopped for ice cream and I reached in my bag to get my wallet to pay for the ice cream and my wallet was gone.
Oh, no.
And unfortunately, I had two Visa cards and my debit card in the wallet. So I had to call. We stopped in the ice cream shop and I had to get in touch with my bank. I had to get in touch with Visa. I had to cancel the cards and, you know, that left us with just the credit card that my husband had in his wallet, which was a different American Express card, and his debit card. And lo and behold, the next day, he goes into a market to pick up a couple of bottles of water because we were getting on the road. And he just took his debit card in. And as he walked out of the market, he put his debit card in his back pocket. And somebody must have picked his pocket.
And they took it.
They took his debit card. So we then had to cancel that. So we were left. We had a week of vacation left and we had one credit card between us that we could use, which was kind of precarious. So we learned some important lessons, which we'll talk about a little bit further in this episode about savvy tips for smart travelers and how to be prepared for anything that might happen when you're traveling.
What are some of your top lists as far as the financial piece? Or tips, I should say, in the financial, because that is interesting in like knowing your credit card numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
Dividing.
So after that trip,
yeah,
we started. Now, whenever we travel, when we leave our hotel, we always lock a couple of credit cards inside the safe. Mm-hmm. And we will each take a different card with us. So between us, we have two Visa cards, two different Visa cards, two different American Express cards. And I actually, at one point, was going to consolidate to just like have fewer cards.
Right.
But because we travel a lot, I won't do that because I like to have, like, in case anything happens, we've got financial resources.
Yeah.
So when we leave, we always carry a different card in case one of us gets pickpocketed.
Mm-hmm.
We have some way of getting money to get back to where we're going. And then we keep a couple of cards in the safe at the hotel in case we get pickpocketed. And then we also keep, because I didn't have with me when we got pickpocketed in Paris, a list of the credit card company customer service numbers and our credit card numbers, at least the last four digits, so that we could call and cancel them easily.
Right.
I mean, it was chaos to try to get those things canceled right away. So that's one tip. When you travel, separate your cards and make sure you have the information you need to get in touch with your bank and your credit card company should something go wrong.
Yeah. Robert and I use those things around our neck. Those little pouches, and we keep our credit card and passport in it. So it's not accessible in our pockets or a fanny pack or a purse. So we're pretty religious about doing that. That's not foolproof, but it does help a little bit. My sister had her wallet taken in Scotland, and she had to get, thank goodness my other sister was with her, they had to get to England. But at that point, I got scared of purse snatching and so forth. So that's where I keep it. But I definitely like the idea of splitting up the credit cards because anything can happen. We tend to just take one each. So we leave the rest at home, but you never know.
You never know.
You never know if, in fact, you'll need that other one. So we should be bringing in a second one or a third one and putting it in a safe place because things like that happen. You hear about it all the time.
Yeah. And it can really create havoc if you're left without money. The other thing I will add, because it relates to finances and also that specific episode, no matter how kind-hearted and empathetic you are, no matter how cute the dog is or pitiful the children that are sitting there begging, do not, and I repeat, do not engage with people who are panhandling or begging on the street.
Right.
It may not be what you think it is.
They have it down to science.
They really do.
They've mastered that.
And they're looking to see where you're keeping your money.
Yeah.
And you just don't want to expose yourself in that way.
True. I go back to my mother's little tip as well is, hoarding a little cash in your bra. Nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah. You know, another piece, not really finances, language, but can relate to finances. So in that same trip, because we only had ultimately the one credit card. And on the last day of the trip, we drove out to see Mont Saint-Michel. And we're in the car and we're driving along. And I'm like, oh my God, we have no gas. Well, this is a problem. We get to the gas station. It didn't take our credit card because it didn't have the right kind of chip for their machines.
Okay.
And like, we're halfway to Mont Saint-Michel and we have no gas. We had a little bit of cash. So Dave was like, do you think we can ask someone to like take our cash and pump gas for us? Because there was no facility for using cash. There was no, it wasn't an attended station. It was just,
you just know, the tank.
Credit card only, right? So we're like, we don't speak French. Like between the two of us, we have maybe 10 words. So this woman pulls up and we're like, hello. And we're trying to communicate with her with a mixture of sign language and very, very broken French and a little bit of English that we needed her to pump gas for us in exchange for our money. And she got it and she took care of it. But it does help if you have at least a little bit of a working knowledge of the language, or you can bring some sort of, have your phone with Translate on, because you never know when you're going to really need somebody to help you.
Right. Well, and also talking about the credit cards, and you alluded to it before about dividing and so forth, calling your credit card company and asking what your restrictions are and are there places that it can't be used might be helpful as well. And put them on notice about where you're going to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. So they don't shut off their card thinking something has happened.
Right. Would be another piece to the credit card. I always like the packing piece. Well, there's a couple things. First, I like the planning of the adventure side of a trip. But I also like the packing. You pack light. I pack medium. I couldn't go on a 7-day trip. I don't think I could go on a 7-day trip with a carry-on. I don't think I could. I'd follow one rule first and then I add to it. So I have a 3-2-1 rule that I've read about before, and it's 3 tops, 2 pants, and 1 dress, and it gives you 7 outfits. That may be for some people. I need more than 7 outfits sometimes, you know, because I'm doing different things. So you have the evening, you have the morning. I like to run. So when I'm in a new city, so I need those tennis shoes and those leggings and that top. But I'd like to hear your tips on packing lightly because I told you I'm even bringing a generator on my next trip. So I don't pack lightly.
Now, and to our listeners, the generator actually is necessary so you can have a hairdryer because it's the boat trip. This is my primary packing tip. I start with the shoes.
Oh.
Because otherwise, when I start with outfits, then I find, oh, well, I need these shoes for this and those shoes for that. And shoes take up a ton of space.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually figure out what shoes do I need. I need a pair of running shoes or good walking shoes.
Yeah.
And I need a pair of shoes that I could wear to dinner or someplace a little bit nicer. And I try to limit myself to just those 2 pairs of shoes. Sometimes I'll add a 3rd pair, which is what I'll wear to the airport. But usually I try to wear the sneakers to the airport and pack the dressier shoes in my bag. So then all my outfits revolve around those shoes. And then also whatever shoes I pack, I'll actually stuff my socks or my underwear inside the shoe to take up space. Right. It's not wasted space. I do try to pack. I use a 3-3-3 rule. So it's like three pants, three shirts, and three like layering or alternative things. I sometimes bring a dress. I often don't. It depends on whether or not where we're going. I think I will need a dressier outfit than I can get out of.
Sometimes it's just ease for casual.
Yeah, sometimes. Like, you know, when we went to Scotland, it was a pretty casual country.
Right.
So I didn't actually bring a dress. I didn't really need one. On the boat trip, my husband and I recently did a cruise to Alaska. They had said in the notes, you know, on the boat that you should bring nice outfits for dinner. In fact, it said black tie, which I was like, whoa, it's kind of hard. So I packed several nice dresses and then it was casual. Apparently the non-Alaska cruises are a little more dressy. So knowing where you're going and what you need and trying to pack light and think about like layers of clothes rather than whole different outfits. So like you can bring a sweater that you can put over several different things for the night.
Right.
And then wear the lighter.
I think where the trips that I'm most challenged, I can think of two in my mind immediately, but it's where weather changes so much. So you're in the 40s and then you're in the 70s or 80s. And the layering is very important. Also, I think a scarf is important. A wrap is important. Those things take very little space, but they actually give you warmth. So I think it's challenging when the weather is so different because you really have to think through that. And like on our boat trip or any type of sailing or boating trip, even like cruising trip, there are more adventure type stuff, even hiking. I have little capsules that I put in a little container and it's stuck in my closet and I only wear them during those periods of time. Like if I'm hiking, like going on the Windjammer, I have like four pair of pants I wear just for that. Mm-hmm. And I've worn them year after year. They're in a little plastic container with, you know, a quilted vest, a few other things that I'm going to use. That's challenging packing for me because of all the weather and all the layering. Though I will say you need nothing fancy. So that's nice. It is the most casual of casual. The other challenge...
Although you need costumes.
You do need costumes.
We have costumes. Nice.
We've added that.
Yeah.
Or I guess we've had it for a while. That's the other challenging trip for me for packing was when I went to the UAE. So my son was over in Sharjah in the UAE, just outside of Dubai. And it's a hot climate. I went in a cooler climate, but it was still like 70s or 80s. But thinking about only taking long sleeves that are breathable, taking enough scarves, you know, to wrap my head that are dark enough, to not take bright colors, to think through the culture of how they dressed and not so much how an American would dress, you know, finding that they would feel comfortable with me being in that environment because it wasn't Dubai. I was in Sharjah. I spent some time in Dubai, but Sharjah was the most conservative emirate in the UAE. And my son told me very specifically of what kind of things to think about bringing. I mean, even wearing pants that would cover my ankles or a dress that would come down to my ankles was important. Mm-hmm. So that was a challenging trip. I loved the challenge, you know, and finding things that would work. But I could have done a little better on the culture side of it. We've talked about some of my faux pas on that trip. But the packing piece was a challenge for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, one other packing tip I have is if you're going someplace where you have like an interim stop. So, for example, our annual sailing trip, I almost always drive partway up the day before and I'll use the opportunity to visit family and then go the rest of the way the next day and meet up on the boat. And I have figured, and I often do trips like that where you're going one place and another. I actually always pack a first night bag and it has just the essential things I need for that first night. Clean underwear, a clean shirt, clean pair of socks, my toothbrush, so that I don't have to bring my whole suitcase in or I don't have to open up my whole suitcase that first night.
Right. That's a smart way to do it. And you just leave it in the car.
You just leave everything in your car. Yeah. And the other thing I've started doing recently, if I'm traveling to another city, I will not, like on the cruise, it was a little different because I didn't know what would be available on the boat. But like going to a different city, I actually don't necessarily pack a complete toiletries bag. So I'll bring the things that I can't replicate somewhere else. But shampoo, body wash, right. toothpaste. I just go to like the local Pharmacia or CVS equivalent in the city when I arrive, and I buy the travel size things and use them while I'm there and then just throw them away.
Oh, that's smart. And it saves space.
It saves space. It's just easier. Nothing's going to leak in my bag because I've had times where those things have opened up and leaked all over. So I just now like don't really need that. I can buy it. I don't use, and I never use, the shampoos and conditioners in the hotels.
How come?
I just don't know, like, who's packing them and...
Ah, interesting.
I have a kind of an issue about that. So I like to have my own.
Yeah.
But I will buy it on site and then just use it there.
So I use theirs. Well, maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. I've never really thought about that. I think before you even get to the packing piece, to really put some thought in your trip and what you're going to do. Like, where are you going to be? What are you going to do? Like, I know I'm going to walk or run every single day. So I know that that's a non-negotiable, or my tennis shoes and my leggings and so forth. But what else am I going to do? Sometimes I like trips just to organically unfold. My husband and I tend to put some things on the calendar of our days at a given place. But sometimes we just leave it open and just allow it to fall into place. So packing a few little things, because it might be a fancy restaurant. So packing one of those things, because I know that somebody, you know, gives us a suggestion for a certain restaurant that I want to be prepared. And I like, once I get into the town, so we'll circle back to the preparation of it. I like to ask the locals, mm-hmm. like, where do you go on a Saturday night? What do you do? What do you enjoy most about this city? Where do the locals hang? So finding somebody that lives in the area, or if you go to a restaurant, asking them, okay, I'm here, but where would you have gone tonight to eat?
I totally think that's great. And we do similar. When we travel, we almost always try to strike up a conversation with someone at a restaurant. So when we went to Scotland, every single night we were talking to the people at the tables next to us, in part just to make a connection.
Right.
But also to ask them, what are you doing? What was your favorite part so far? Mm-hmm. Because you might find something that you haven't thought about.
True.
You know?
That's what I like about bed and breakfasts versus mm-hmm. hotels, mm-hmm. because you get to know the innkeepers and they tell you. And we did that in Scotland when yes. you and I went. The bed and breakfast people gave us suggestions. I think that's how we found Rockpool, was from the lady.
Yeah, absolutely.
The lady there, which is, I think, a fun way to do it. And I know, like, I go to Maine and I love this inn. And actually, they just ranked three in the country, number one in Maine. But they were like in the top 10 for the world, which is the Maine Stay Inn right in Camden. And the owners there, Peter and Janice, have given me so many suggestions of what to do up and down the coast of Maine. And it's never failed me. So talking to those innkeepers is helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. And people at restaurants.
Yeah.
Serving staff.
Yep.
Right?
It's true.
Because they're locals and they can tell you things.
Yeah, they know.
They know.
Anything else that you would pack? Electronics. I mean, I try and put that in my carry-on. My medication's basic, but I mean,
I actually bought a smaller camera, a portable camera.
Oh,
so I used to always bring my camera kit, and that was just a big thing. Now I make a distinction between trips that are photography trips
mm-hmm.
and trips that are not, for which I just need a easy, lightweight, portable camera. So I've had to kind of swallow my pride on the fancy camera thing.
It's a hard thing
it is.
To decide. I recently got back from Japan with my husband and five other couples. And what an incredible midlife trip that is to go with other people your age and go into these big adventures. But because I was with my husband and I didn't want him to have to hang out and wait for me to change a lens or figure out my settings, which I love photography. And this was so hard. I left my camera behind.
Oh, it's so hard.
I didn't even take it. I'm like, I'm going to be present. I'm going to be in the moment. I'm going to enjoy my husband. I'm going to enjoy this incredible country and my friends. So I only had my iPhone. I will say, people want to go onto my Instagram at American Minsters. It's open. It's not a private one. The pictures that I was able to get in Japan, like in Kyoto and everywhere, Kobe, from my camera was unbelievable. My phone camera was unbelievable. Like, I am rethinking what type of equipment I want to take on those type of trips. Now, when I go on a photography trip and need a telephoto, or we're out on the Chesapeake Bay or in the ocean, we need a telephoto. So our phone's not going to do that for us. But I think for the photographers out there, look at where you're going to be. And if it is like street photography mainly, the phones do a nice job. Or you have a nice small portable, very nice small portable. I have a Leica, but I chose not to even take it. I shocked myself.
I'm sure your husband actually appreciated that.
He did.
Because that is a point of contention for my husband and I when we travel. However, on this last trip to Alaska, I actually did bring my bigger camera because it was easy because we were on the boat most of the time. And I bought my little Leica. Mm-hmm. And so I actually got my husband to use the Leica and come out and do photography with me. That was huge.
Did he love it?
He did. He had a really good time. So,
I wish Robert would do that. What Robert does is like, show me what you got.
Yeah.
I'm like, show you what I got. And he'll look at my pictures and he'll pick and choose and he'll keep the ones and send them to the boys or the ones that he likes. And I mean, it's kind of funny to see the chat. They're like, moms, dads.
You know, there's another thing about leaving the camera behind, which is in ages past when I was really focusing on photography, what I would do at a destination often turned on where I thought I could get great photos. Mm-hmm. And now I kind of try to like, okay, that's, if it's not a photo trip, really, I want to focus on other things. You know, more low-key things, more of an experience of place. In terms of planning a trip, what do you think about using ChatGPT to do the planning for you?
Oh, I haven't done that.
I haven't either, but I had a conversation with friends last night that
I think it would be great in the I think it would be great in the fact that it pulls from the internet. That's where it gets its information. So it would pull a lot of information, but I think that the worry about that for me, it would be the top 10 attractions that tourists would go to. So I would want to tease that apart. I would probably prefer to look into almost like an Instagram or a travel website where people have had boots on the ground and they're there and they've experienced, because we're like this way. It's not about the attractions. It's taking away from the sense of what that country or what that city's about and how those locals live and what they enjoy and what we can get from that. So I think it has its place for both. I think ChatGPT would probably tell you the documents you need, maybe some of the things you wouldn't want to miss, and better ways of getting there transportation-wise. Though in Tokyo, we took public transportation. People don't even speak English there for the most part. Like, the hotels. So you have to get by, but maybe GPT would have helped us know that a little more of what we could have done on the prep side of it. Like, we could have downloaded a transportation card before we ever got there. So there would be, I think, some place for chat GPT. I rather talk to somebody that's been there before, somebody that's local. And honestly, a lot of the people that Instagram that just do experiences in different countries, there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I've never used ChatGPT. And I was saying we had dinner last night with friends who just planned their upcoming trip using ChatGPT. And I, you know, there's a little resistance because I just kind of have issues with AI. But also, to me, planning the trip is part of the fun of the trip. I want to go on and find, like you said, people that have, you know, bloggers or articles that have been written in travel magazines, good ones, not like ones that are just selling or something, about the place, so that even if I'm choosing not to do things, I know what I'm omitting.
Right.
And I'm consciously deciding not to do that. So for me, part of the fun is the planning process and looking and seeing, like, what are the best towns to visit? What are the best neighborhoods? What are the best restaurants, the out-of-the-way restaurants?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the strange attractions that you wouldn't think of? And I don't want to take that away.
Yeah.
You know? I will say that when I plan, well, first of all, planning for me begins way before. So as soon as I decide I'm going someplace, I will use one of my travel credit cards as much as I possibly can to run up my points so that I can then hopefully get a free hotel stay or tickets. You know,
great tip.
Yeah. If you think in advance, and you're always thinking in advance if you're a traveler, you can start using your cards in a smart way to build up your points so that you can have the points available to reduce the cost of your trip.
Right.
That's the first thing I always do. But then I will actually go on like Expedia or Orbitz or one of these websites to look at flights. Mm-hmm. But I never book through them.
Right.
I just want to see what the options are and what's inexpensive. Then once I narrow down what I want, I go and I always book directly through the airline. I always book directly through the hotel, because if something goes wrong, and I've had so many trips where things have had to change, you want to be able to be dealing directly with the provider, not the party.
True. When I was in the UAE, we were at a Marriott, and I used a travel agent, which I never do, somebody I knew, and it worked out okay. But when it came to the hotel, I was like, no, I want to stay at a Marriott. I want to be very specific. I was so glad I did, because when you do that, they upgrade. So the upgrades that I got from the Marriott, and then I went from Dubai to Abu Dhabi, and I was with my cousin Carol, who's a savvy traveler for sure. And we're like, well, we can look at other, we're in a Marriott, and the Marriott in Dubai said, look, we have a Ritz-Carlton there, and you could get two of your three meals there every day, and it's free wine, all this stuff. And so they did that. Had we used a third party, that would have never been at our disposal. But also talking about ChatGPT or looking at top 10 attractions and, you know, jumping into a city and doing those things and moving out. I mean, there's a difference about seeing something, like seeing it. There are things I want to see. It's like food. You know, you look at your food, but it is the flavor. Like, I want the flavor of what that country's about, what that site is about. I want to feel it. I want to taste it. I want to touch it. So if you just pack your schedule for things to see, you're going to miss out. You know, it's not even going to be the same memory.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm a firm believer, though. I always book. There are a lot of people that want the ultimate in spontaneity. I'm just going to go and figure it out when I get there. I always have my hotels all planned out. And I always book restaurants. Now, I don't always go to the restaurants I've booked. But I will book a restaurant for every night. Like when we went to London last year, I had a restaurant booked for every night. Mm-hmm. We ended up scratching some of those and going to other places. But I kind of worry about going someplace where you think you're going to be able to get food and you can't. So case in point, we went to Quebec City for Christmas with the kids, right? And I had said to the kids, I'm going to book Christmas Eve dinner and Christmas night dinner. But other than that, like, you guys figure out where you want to eat. You make the arrangements. Well, being young people, they were really into the spontaneity thing. So there wasn't a whole lot of planning that went in beforehand. When we got there, they were like, oh, we want to eat here and we want to eat there. Those places were all booked.
Mm.
It was Christmas week in Quebec.
Yeah.
We were not going to get a reservation. So there was a lot of scrambling to get a place to eat each night. I would rather have a place booked and then scratch it if I find something else. Or because when I get there, someone says, you really have to eat here.
Right.
At least I know I've got a place to go if I can't get a reservation. So don't feel like making plans in advance lock you in.
Mm-hmm.
You've still got spontaneity and flexibility, but you've also got security.
Right. I like booking restaurants too. I think that is important. Otherwise, you're spending so much time trying to think of where you're going to eat and how you're going to get there. And yeah, availability in big cities
can be
is very minimal. It really is. It is tricky.
Mm-hmm.
There are places that when we were in Scotland, we've done some travel together, but even in a small town like Inverness, you needed reservations or you'd be eating fish and chips on the corner, which isn't bad.
Yeah, but it might not be what you want. It's exploring the culinary experience.
It's true.
Right?
Well, hopefully if you get to travel with somebody that likes that. Right. I have a meat and potatoes husband, but he entertains me. He will go and enjoy. He'll find something off the menu.
One thing that helps in being able to reserve places or know that there will be places is to try to think about, can you travel on a shoulder season?
Right.
Not
That's
in
a
the,
good point.
Yeah, not in the heart of the season for that place, but a little before, a little after. And actually, both times I've gone to Scotland, you and I went together. My husband and I went. We went shoulder season, right? March, April.
Right.
Before the real tourist season kicks
in. It's chilly.
It's a little chilly. You can't do necessarily everything you want to do, but you can do enough.
Right.
And actually, you get a lot more, you know, things are less crowded. It's easier to get in to see things or, you know, go places. So there's an advantage sometimes to traveling during that.
Both expense-wise and availability of doing things, I guess.
Yeah, if expense is an issue for you, that's definitely the way to go, is to look at shoulder season travel. I went to Rome with my daughter in April, which is sort of before their regular season, and it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit cold, but it was way less crowded than it is, say, in June.
Yeah. Well, when I was raising my children, when my husband and I were raising our children, a lot of our travel was based on a family vacation and visiting family. Like at Christmas and Thanksgiving, we moved away to the, you know, up to D.C. and left our family behind. And so we don't have anyone up here. So that was a big piece of our travel. Now, as we've gotten older, we travel to our kids now, it seems like, as well as our family. But the different types of travel have changed. I wasn't able to do girls' trips or women's trips. That just was not in my day or my year. It didn't exist. We did a cousin sister trip once a year, but that was later on as my kids got older, and that was something. But the different types of travel is fun as well. So there's family travel. There's your couple travel. We've added our couple travel with other couple travel, It was fantastic in Japan. For people listening and looking to do different types of travel, I would definitely look at traveling with other couples of like mind or people that you enjoy, and maybe people in different parts of the country. Because when you spend that kind of time, like a week, 10 days, this was almost 3 weeks with individuals that you might see once or twice a year or once every 2 or 3 years, that is valuable time. And then just basic women trips. I don't want my family to hear this, but it has become one of my favorite.
It's a whole different thing.
So thinking about travel and thinking about what you want to do, placing those type of activities, adventures, who you want to see, putting thought into that will also really make a difference in your travel. And we are, we scrutinize right now who we like to travel with, even on the women's trip. So people that would enjoy each other. We hope to put it out to more people in the future, but we have wait lists and people wanting to go that we're able, you know, mainly people that it's first come, first serve. But we're also thoughtful in how we put people together in rooms and things like that as well. So I think different types of travel take different types of planning and different types of thinking. Yeah. In preparing for it, I'd like to talk or hear your ideas of like a women's trip in general, because you take several. I do too, mainly with my cousins and my sisters and our women's trip, and then getting ready to go to Portugal with some women too. But what are some of the things you think about on those trips specifically in preparation? And
anytime you're traveling with other people, just really pay attention to who you're going with and understanding, discussing in advance what people's expectations are. People have different level of travel comfort, mm-hmm. you know, like my husband and I, we're really comfortable doing it on a shoestring. You know what I mean? Some people are not.
Right.
Right. So you have to have a kind of like-mindedness. With family travel, one thing I would say is if you're planning a family vacation, think about what your kids can endure. So we planned one event per day. And even though there's a million other things you want to see, you can add them later. It's like I said before, it doesn't preclude spontaneity. But we planned one thing a day so that if the kids were just too strung out and couldn't do any more, that was fine. We were done. We could go back to the room and take a nap. We could go just sit and have ice cream. So like, be aware of what you can tolerate.
Right. That's a good point, too. And then they have some perspective of what's going on or expected of themselves
they only have to do one thing.
Yeah.
Look, guys, this is what we're doing today. Then they can prepare themselves. And if they want more, they'll tell you, let's go do something else. Then they feel like they've got agency, which makes everyone happier. One other tip I would just throw out there, because I don't want to leave this off. Think about the things that could happen when you're traveling that you don't anticipate. I have unfortunately had to be in the hospital on 3 separate occasions in foreign travel, and that is not a pleasant thing. But know what your insurance covers in advance. Think about whether or not you need trip insurance. My insurance covers the hospital stay, everything in place. We've talked a little bit. If you're going far afield, you might want travel insurance in case you need to be bought home.
Right.
But think that through, because that can happen. I always travel with a first aid kit. I bring Tylenol. I bring Motrin. I bring an antibiotic ointment.
You'd think you were the nurse.
I know. But it's always,
I do the same thing first. Yeah.
I mean, you just don't know what's going to happen. And right. you really don't want to be in a situation where you haven't thought that through and it comes mm-hmm. up.
Right.
The other thing is cars. Think about renting a car. Do you or don't you need car insurance? Know what your credit card will cover, right? American Express will give you usually car insurance. If you have good car insurance at home, it will cover. You don't need an extra policy when you're traveling.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. So you need to look into all that and know all of those little ins and outs before you go.
And I think talking to people that have been there before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just putting it out there in an email or whatever, because you learn a lot. But I like the travel tips that you said just now covered with the healthcare, because I don't think a lot of people think about that. We think about trip insurance if something happens to us here and we can't go. But things do happen.
Yeah. I broke my back on a trip. And so, like, that was a big deal. And just to let you all know, you'll get through that.
Right.
So we would love to hear from our listeners what kind of tips you guys have for savvy travel. So you can find us at AmericanMidsters.com, send us an email. You can go to our Instagram. We have the Midsters podcast. We have a TikTok. You can reach out to us through our social media and give us your top tips for traveling so that we can share them with other people. Okay, so Elizabeth, do you have questions for us about travel tips?
I do. When you look back at your favorite trips, are the best memories planned or spontaneous?
The best trips have been in regard to memories are the spontaneous. Things that I've never thought about, the glitter that comes with a connection or an experience or interaction while in travel.
Because, you know, I'm a person that lives my life through stories. I think that spontaneous events. And sometimes it's a planned event, but something happens that takes you out of what you thought you were planning. They make the best stories, and they're the ones that you take home with you and share over and over again and encapsulate that trip. It's the spontaneous moments, but those can often spin out from planned events.
Is there a travel moment that changed the way you see the world or yourself?
When my husband and I went on our honeymoon, we went to Rome. And on the flight out, we were sitting next to an 85-year-old man who was traveling with a hired companion. He had always wanted to travel, but his wife was afraid of traveling. She didn't want to get on an airplane. And she had recently died. And he was like, I am going to go see the world now that I have the chance. So he hired someone to travel with him. Lovely guy. And for some reason, we kept running into him during our trip. And we went to several different cities. And every time we went to another city, he was there. It was so cool. But the pinnacle of this was we were in Siena and we climbed to the top of, there's a tower on the piazza in Siena, and we were climbing to the top of the tower. And honestly, it was the most beautiful moment because there was a concert going on in the square and it was an operatic performance. Yeah. And like you're up in this tower and there's like this opera music wafting up and it's so incredibly beautiful and moving. And who do we see but this 85-year-old guy with his companion climbing these steps in this tower, which was a physical feat in and of itself. But like that, in that moment, so many things came together, like our connectedness as people sharing this experience and just this beauty of this incredible moment. It was just phenomenal.
Well, the first one that made me think of the world differently is a trip that I took to the UAE. Totally different culture, totally different religion. It made me realize that even though there's so many things in which the humans are alike, there's also there are very many different aspects of people and the way they look at life themselves, not just religion, but culture in general. So that definitely made me look at the world a little differently. As far as something that changed me and continues to, my mother's from Scotland. I have 50% of my entire family is in Scotland. And so when I go to Scotland and I see how my family lives there and their values and how it is different than the American piece of me, the way I live and that side of my family from my dad, it continually changes me. I embrace it in such a different way. I absorb it. I want more of it. So I mean, both in different places.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.